How much do you know about where what you eat, what you serve up for dinner comes from? This is a question that became an itch that English-born Deb Hunt had to scratch. She's not a bushy. She's a vegetarian. And she was just prompted to scratch that itch in a big way. She's been travelling along the dusty roads, out across the country, far and wide, to meet farmers and graziers and climb inside their experience of life on the land. She's pulled them, all these stories, into a book, Australian Farmers Farming Families. It's a terrific read. Eight Australian farming families. At the helm of these farms are incredible, innovative, resilient women, often having to endure drought and fire and flood and much else, but something keeps them thriving. And joining us this morning with Deb Hunt is Lynn French from Gilberton Station in far north Queensland and Kath Marriott from Yooralla near Benalla in Victoria. Good morning to you all.
Hi, everyone. Thank you.
Oh, what a treat to have you all on the line. We're spanning right across Australia this morning with this conversation. Let me start with Deb Hunt. Deb, what drew you to trying to tell these stories in this book?
I think it was curiosity. My father always grew food. I'm fascinated by growing food myself. My partner is a carnivore, so I buy meat, even though I'm a vegetarian. And I wanted to know, who are these people who provide our food?
Mm.
And what I discovered was, not only do they care about the animals that they farm and the land that they farm and each other, there's this incredible connection, but they've also got a pocket full of stories to tell. And that was fascinating for me. So I embarked on this project nervously because I don't know anything about farming, but also full of hope and optimism.
And curiosity.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because we should all be curious. For those Australians listening now who live in cities, these are the stories we need to know.
Yeah, you can't eat your smartphone. We rely on technology, but the people who put food on our tables are the people who are out on the land growing it. And if we're not prepared to grow it ourselves, then those are the people that we rely on. And I was fascinated to find out more about them.
So Lynn French, Gilberton Station there in Queensland, describe for everyone where you are right now. Where's Gilberton Station?
Gilberton is roughly around about 450 kilometres directly west of Townsville. We're on the head of the Gilbert River, and this is home.
What do you run on the farm?
We've got Brahman Cross beef cattle. I suppose we're sort of the first leg of the chain. We're getting that beef on the table.
Mm. There are some really striking similarities about both of your stories, Lynn and Kath. And so I'll just establish where you both are and then I'll make those connections. But Kath Marriott, you're in Benalla in Victoria. Tell us about the property that you run there, and you have run it for many decades.
30 years, actually, Natasha. We've got 2,200 acres and it's 200 kilometres northeast of Melbourne, just off the Hume Highway.
What do you run on Yooralla?
We have all sheep.
Now, what intrigues me about both of your stories as, you know, strong, independent women on the land is how you both got there. Lynn French, you were determined as a young kid. You weren't going to get married and you weren't going to have kids. So how did you end up doing both and running a farm? I think this starts really with your own family story in many ways, because your father was ambitious about a life on the land, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, and I suppose I sort of grew up with this chip on my shoulder, I guess you could call it. I was working in a man's world where women weren't really seen as the adequate person to be doing those jobs like driving dozers and road trains and mustering and whatever it shall be, even though they've been doing it for hundreds of years. And, I guess I just sort of grew up with that bit of a chip and took off from home and did what I wanted to do, and somehow a fella just turned up and just wrecked the whole story.
Speaking of one fella called Rob, but your father was and this is the case for both of you. You both had parents or a parent who was very disciplinarian, and you really rebelled against that, didn't you, Lynn?
I did. I suppose you could probably say, and excuse the French, I was a real mongrel kid. our three kids haven't even heard half of the stories, and I'll let them get a little bit older before I tell them, because I'm pretty strict with them. So,
well, we're going to get to your kids, because actually both of you also have children that who are quite strong-willed. Kath, you came to farming with a music degree, of all things, and also a disciplinarian mother. You'd lost your father very young.
Yep, that's right. I mean, I think she did it out of fear of failure, and it was the way that she'd been brought up by her mother in the Depression, which was that if you didn't get on with the job, you know, you couldn't rely on the fact of the job being there. So, you know, and it was just that I was probably a weak, pathetic creature that couldn't cope with it all, so I just kept agreeing, whereas my brother Andrew, he had sort of more gumption and got out and did much more, whereas I stayed home and then went and worked and did research in the BBC in London, and then Mum bought a farm again where we had originally started, and I came home, and of course that was the end of that, and then this lovely boy next door walked in, and that was the end of that.
And I just need to point to Deb here, Deb Hunt, who's brought these stories together. Kath is known for putting herself down.
Absolutely. And when I first called Kath to say, could I interview you for this book? She said, why would you want to interview me? I haven't got a story to tell. I haven't done anything special, which is so not true.
And what a story it was to tell. Who was the boy next door, Kath?
John Marriott. Yeah, absolute darling.
And you built a life together and a farm together.
Yep.
And you had children together. And the tragedy is that you lost John when he was just, well, 6 months after his 40th birthday from stomach cancer.
Yes, which was, you know, really something which was so untenable in anyone's mind as far as the fact that he didn't drink and he didn't smoke except on a very social basis. And you know, we wouldn't use chemicals. We never used artificial food, you know, and he used to ride a pushbike around mustering sheep sometimes because it made him feel better. And yet here was this man that succumbed to this, you know, awful, awful disease. So who would know?
No, that's right. And what really struck me, Kath, is why you kept the farm at that point. Your kids were under 10. You had four children together.
Yep.
You'd lost your husband, and yet you kept that farm going. And why did you do that at that point?
I think the thing was it was a dream shared with John and I that we would give the children an opportunity. I mean, we were both passionate about the idea of growing food and about raising children with an understanding and respect for living systems. And I don't think, Natasha, I just wouldn't have survived if I'd been in the city, because the kids just would have got seriously into mischief and I wouldn't have known what to do, whereas the mischief here really relied on ponies and pushbikes and motorbikes and, you know, just silly sort of stuff. But that made for them understanding how far you can go without something going wrong.
You made the decision to send your children away for education. Both of you made really powerful, strong decisions around education for your kids on your farms. That was a decision you took, Kath, and I'll come back to you. But Lynn French, you made a decision to educate your kids on the farm, and you couldn't read and write yourself. Tell us about that determination that you felt.
At the time, I thought I was a bit of a fruit loop to even consider it, but I think it was just, I've always, like growing up from an early age, work was the main thing. So, you know, not having a great deal of schooling, and at the time I didn't really care anyway, because, I mean, who wanted to go to school, you know?
I think you only went to school for 4 years in the end, is that right?
Yeah, if that. Just the fact that I didn't want the kids to sort of be behind the eight ball where I was, even though I didn't feel that at the time I was disadvantaged, but really was. I don't know. I suppose it was the kids that gave me the strength to want to learn. And, yeah, we just sort of grabbed it with both hands and ran.
You copped a bit of resistance for that, though, didn't you? Here you were attempting to educate three children on your farm.
Yeah, probably. And my father-in-law was a big help too. Now, he was sort of the wise old child of everything, sort of behind the family, although Rob was always good, but he'd throw his hands in the air sort of thing. And we'd just sort of, oh, well, wait till Grandad comes down. He'll sort this out for us. And he would. It was okay, you know, it was all right for the school, because we did School of the Air. They give you the answers, but that wasn't much good to me. I needed to know how they got that answer. So Grandad had come down and we'd work backwards before we worked forwards.
So give the example of Anna at age 11 or so, 11 or 12, was determined to go and do a certificate too in beef production. And you made it happen.
You know, I always said to the kids, can't is a dirty word. It's like a swear word in our house. If you want to do something, you get out there off your backside and make it happen. And yeah, it was. It was very hard because the government's education system seen 11-year-old as incapable of doing this, even though, like all bush kids, it's just part and parcel of their everyday and growing up. So yeah, we fought on and we won and she did it.
Deb Hunt, when you drove to Lynn's property, you describe a sign that really was an indication of... Well, describe that first encounter, heading in to see Lynn. I mean, heading in to see Lynn was, what was it, 400k from Townsville?
Yes, and...
450, yeah.
Yeah, let's get that right. 450k from Townsville.
And each K counts, because most of them are on dirt. So it took me, I think, about 7 hours to get there. And for most of that, I didn't see another car, another person. And all I had was a mud map, sat-nav, couldn't work out where I was. I think towards the end of the journey, I began to doubt the mud map. I began to worry because I'd been driving for so long, it was getting late. And then I saw a sign hammered into the hillside. I think it said something like, speed limit 20 kilometres. 15, my goodness.
Slow it down, Deb, yeah. Slow it down.
Take the foot off that accelerator. And then it was handwritten and it said, if you hit my kid or my dog, you won't need a lawyer. And I thought, oh, I think I might have arrived.
And Lynn French, your kids thrived in education at Gilberton Station, didn't they? I think you got them learning musical instruments and all number of things.
Yeah, they were really good. I suppose I was lucky that our oldest daughter was above average student, so at times I'm sure she taught me more than what I taught her.
But that said, you do live in geographical isolation. There's a very practical reality to that. I mean, when floods come, for example, you're cut off.
I am, but that's just part and parcel of living here. You know, it doesn't bother me. You get a big wet weather order in, take the truck down and send an order down and they do it up and you sort of get about a, you know, 4 or 5 months supply, and then if it rains, well, that's a bonus. If it doesn't, well, we're all pulling our hair out.
And now you're involved in all those initiatives that helped your kids get educated, aren't you?
I'm still involved. I was on Federal Council of ICPA for 6 years.
And what's that?
Isolated Children's Parents Association. It's a voluntary lobby group lobbying for rural and remote children's education needs. But I'm still on admin of VISE, which is VISE for Isolated Students Education.
And this was a woman who couldn't read and write when she had her kids.
You do what you have to do, eh?
Kath Marriott, you decided to have your children educated away from the farm. How big a decision was that?
Oh, it was absolutely immense because you don't necessarily have the funds to pay for it, number one. But the other thing was that it meant that you're just taking your kids away, you know, and you just sort of think that's just awful because they're just at the stage of life where they're really looking to learn so much more and you can teach them so much more. But then equally, I thought the opportunities that the school gave were things that I couldn't do because I just didn't have time to run the farm. So they went up to Albury to school, and Charlie used to be chucked out of his last class at school so he could catch the early train home every weekend. The thing I liked more than anything was it actually gave them a sense of independence. Mm. It was close enough where they could still be a little bit wicked without Mum being concerned too much about it.
Kath Marriott is with us on her farm, Yarralla, in Benalla in Victoria. Lynn French is with us, Gilberton Station, Queensland, 450k from Townsville. And Deb Hunt is with us because she's collected 8 farming family stories together in a book called Australian Farming Families, Inspiring True Stories of Life on the Land. And here's the thing, Kath and Lynn, all your children, they've all ended up working on the land. Kath Marriott, how do you feel about that? And what are they up to? And why did they feel that pull back to country?
Well, I think the thing was that, you know, child labour was alive and well here. And I just think the sort of whole ethic of living in the country and the responsibility with it, but also the fact that they were needed. And I think it gave them a sense of belonging and a sense of ownership in their own lives. And because they were used to doing a lot of the practical stuff as well as the thinking stuff, they were quite comfortable with the idea that they could see a future in it. Mm. So Catherine's, she actually was awarded the West Australian Rural Woman of the Year, and she runs her own business called Influential Women. And I think she actually might be the patron of the Isolated Children's Parents thing, Lynn. So I think she was just asked to do that in West Australia.
That's your eldest daughter.
Yes, that's my elder daughter. And Hannah's just finished a Nuffield scholarship, so she's starting a new position on a farm that's local. Charlie's the next one, and he was on the farm originally, and then at 19, when the drought hit, was made to feel that he wasn't measuring up, because it just didn't rain. So all his ideas of coping went out the window, and he actually then went and became a diesel mechanic in Broome and runs his own business up there, but is now coming home, which is delightful to say, is that he and Pippa and baby Max are coming home in July to run the farm, and Tom's marrying the girl up the road, and he also did rural science.
So the farming dynasties continue. Lynn French, as a girl, you worked on a farm from a very young age. You found your life on a farm. How do you feel about your children working on a farm?
Quite proud of it, really, because, I mean, you know, you see so many kids that are, you know, after boarding school, they go off and find other qualifications, you know, especially for people in real isolated areas, have a little bit more hassle than people living closer to civilization. And you see so many that have just, no, they just chucked their hands up and see mum and dad going through so much heartache, so they just, no, don't want to come back to land. But we're quite lucky. The two girls and our son of making a life on the land, and it's an important position that they play.
Have they come back to your station to work from time to time?
Oh, yeah. Our son, Ashley, he lives, and his wife and the two little grandkids, they live here on the station about a kilometre down near the sign where it says, hit my kid or dog. And our oldest daughter had been managing a station not far away from here for about 8 years, but she's back home for a little bit. And our youngest one is, her and her partner have got a contract mustering and fencing business. So
it's a real struggle for families whether or not the next generation will keep the farm going. And you both nearly very much lost your lives on the land, because both of you, both, had houses burnt to the ground. And I might just ask how that changed things for you, Kath Marriott.
Oh, I think, I suppose, it all of a sudden makes you very vulnerable. I mean, the house I live in is double brick with no curtains and no carpets, and how could it possibly burn, and no roof space because it's a passive solar. And you just sort of, you know, all of a sudden this thing called life is you are as vulnerable as anybody else to things going wrong. In my case, I'm not really... you know, all those possessions you had in the drawer and you weren't too sure what to do with, well, that was wonderful because they all went. We didn't have to worry about them. But my greatest loss was my books, which went, you know, I'm passionate about books, and my mother's collection of books were all gone. And at that stage, moving on, off we go again. And so that's it.
Yes, I mean, Lynn, for you, living on the land takes a lot of resilience and tenaciousness, but then losing your house, you just don't expect that.
Well, no, and it's a bit like Kath said, we had a brick home and we'd struggled so hard to get it, living comfortable but a little bit feral for quite some years to get it. And then before the blink of an eye, it's gone, and you just don't think it's going to happen to you, but you have to pick up and shake off and move on, and that we're all healthy and well and nobody was hurt, so that was the main thing.
That's what matters. And I just, I'm also struck, both of you have thought very creatively, innovatively about the land and how you farm it. Kath Marriott.
Well, I think we're only stewards, you know, of the land, and if you can try. I mean, I read books about and articles about what the land was like before white settlement, and they're talking 21% carbon in the soil. Well, we would be lucky to have 1% now, and at that stage, with the potential of a very rapid declining rainfall amount, certainly down here, the amount of carbon we have in our soil is probably one of the most important things for growing grass. So I think at that stage we really set our cap on how we could maintain a strong and resilient farm producing good quality food on perennial grasses and how we manage the stock on that, but also about getting enough trees in to protect and make a microclimate to protect it with the number of birds can then eat the pests so you don't have to spray pesticide and bad chemicals. And it's about really knowing that because we have a lend of it, that you have to return it in at least as good, if not better, a state as you got it.
So thinking long term, Lynn French, you and your husband Rob have thought long term too and have made very conscious decisions about the sort of stocking you do.
Rob's always said, you know, less makes more, and it certainly pays off. You know, yeah, fine, we could run another 1,000 head of cattle. And yeah, we just always believed that the family that had been here for 145 years always sort of like leave the land better than when you took over, sort of for the next generation, you know.
Deb Hunt, how has it felt for you then to be a city cousin telling the stories of your country cousins, so to speak, unrelated, no blood relation, but how has it been for you then making this connection? I can see some redness in your eyes and a little bit of tear now.
Definitely, I could weep because I went to all these families who I'd never met before and they all invited me to stay. I could weep, actually. And I came away from all of them thinking I wish I could live there. So I might have to come and visit you all quite regularly.
But just in terms of the process that you've done, what do you hope to achieve with this book?
I think what I want to do is to introduce people to lives that are different from their own, but to people who are living those lives who aren't actually different people. We've all got things in common. We all share things. And when I hear the stories today and the connections between two women who live at opposite ends of the country, yep, who are on totally different properties, who've had completely different backgrounds, different educational experiences, and yet they share so much in common. We've all got things that we can share in common. There are always points where we can identify with somebody else. And when it comes to people who live and work on the land, they matter because without them, we wouldn't have food on our table.
And so say all of us, and the connections are so profound and so striking between all of the stories in this book. Kath Marriott in Benalla, Lynn French on Gilberton Station in Queensland, and Deb Hunt as she wipes some tears away. Thank you so much for all joining us on Life Matters this morning.
That's a great
pleasure. You're welcome.
Thank you.
And Deb Hunt's book is called Australian Farming Families, Great Stories. It's published by Macmillan.